recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the Affair Recovery Library EMSW and EMSO Q&A call. And it's a beautiful day here in Austin with some rain. But let's get on to our questions. First question. Venting and enabling. Would it be possible to address the following both from the perspective of a hurt slash unfaithful spouse who is female and a hurt slash spouse who is male, if it differs? Where is the boundary between allowing the hurt spouse to vent and allowing the hurt spouse to emotionally slash verbally abuse the unfaithful spouse? At what point does the venting become enabling? Both the number of years after D-Day and the intensity of the unresolved conflicts of the present. What is a healthy response on the part of the unfaithful spouse when the boundary is being crossed? In our case, it's been 16 years since D-Day, but I would not say that we've been through 16 years of recovery. It's been much less, which leads to another question. What is the success rate of marriages to recover when only the unfaithful spouse goes through recovery? Is that enough? Thank you for your help. So that is a bunch of questions in one. Let's begin. First off, I don't believe that verbal abuse is ever acceptable when it comes to recovery. I do understand it's something that happens, and I know that when someone is in the initial stages of recovery, the trauma is such that I believe it's really difficult for them to control, which is one of the reasons that we work in the EMSW and the EMS weekend to help with the flooding. But if a couple can't create a sense of safety with a commitment not to make things worse, then recovery is always going to be difficult. To me, there has to be a commitment on both parties' part, the unfaithful and the hurt spouse, to try and learn to speak respectfully with each other, and a goal set to stop verbal abuse on both parts. In that sense, and a boundary to me, by the way, just means you're protecting yourself. You're not trying to punish the other person. But there comes a point where a boundary is drawn and you say, I'm not going to be speaking to you as long as you're flooded and you're being verbally abusive. Whenever we can calm down and have a rational conversation, then we can go forward talking together. In addition, 16 years past D-Day is really sad. I would hope most couples should be able to make significant progress within the first 6 months. We always report that there's usually a dip in the recovery process at about 1 year. However, that doesn't even necessarily have to happen. You ask, how many marriages recover when only the unfaithful goes through a recovery? And actually, I don't necessarily know the answer to that question. I guess the question I would have in return is, why hasn't that person personally gone through recovery? What is their, resistance to that? And is that something that you're helping to create potentially by some of your responses to them? I think in some of the reasons I've seen hurt spouses not want to get help is they think you're the one who caused the problem, they shouldn't have to address it. But I always use the argument, if you're driving a car, or let's say, you know, your mate's driving a car and they're texting and they have a wreck, and the passengers, the kids, the other mate breaks their legs. It's not something that they caused. It's not their fault. But ultimately, if they ever want to really walk again, It's going to be up to them to go to the physical therapy, to get the help they need, to begin to walk properly. You can choose not to do that, but it also means you limp for the rest of your life. And it's same with a psychic wound. We all believe that if someone gets stabbed in the chest, physically we can heal. The same is true of psychic wounds. We can heal, but there's work that has to be done in order for that to happen. And it's not, again, fair, but hopefully they will have enough integrity to do that. There's one situation, and the person doesn't see this when this happens, where I find that sometimes people don't get help. And it's a situation called accusatory suffering by the Seagulls. They coined that phrase. But in that situation, again, as if in sometimes a severe sexual abuse situation, the person becomes almost a living memorial to what's happened out of fear that ultimately, if they were to actually recover, it would make what was a major backstabbing seem like a minor paper cut. And it's like they can't let go of it just for fear of, and I'm sorry, for some reason that call ended up dropping. All I was finishing up with is I do hope that your mate becomes willing to get the help they need and can move forward with her own healing so she doesn't have to live with that pain. And when they do get that help, the recovery process rates are really quite high, usually somewhere around 80%. If this has gone on for 16 years, I'll also say that you've been very patient, and again, hopefully you can get to the place, both of you, where this becomes something not that you keep rotating around, but you live from and becomes actually an asset where you can help others in your life. Next question. Is there a place for pornography within marriage? Can it lead to increased sexual intimacy? I'll just share my personal opinion and what I've seen with couples that have gone that direction. In the short run, I think that couples experience potentially a shift. However, in the long run, I found that it typically leads to resentment and issues, and I think it also can be, even in the short run, very unhealthy. As we say, or as I say, working with pornography, the problem with pornography isn't that it shows too much of a person. In reality, the problem with pornography, it doesn't show enough because it shows a person void of dignity. It shows a person void of the image of God. And for that reason, it makes them the solution rather than ultimately just loving. So, again, in my opinion, it really doesn't lead to increased sexual intimacy. Next question. Dear Rick, we were married in 1998. D-Day for us was January 17th, 2014. On that date, after confronting my husband about a new pair of cufflinks, I found out about a four-year emotional affair and a sexual affair that ended in January 15, 2014. Weeks later, I found out about an earlier emotional and sexual affair that began in 1996 and ended in 2003. I received information in bits and pieces without a clear timeline, and it was difficult to discover and digest this information. Now my husband is trying to reconstruct the details to help me process what happened. He doesn't remember everything, and I'd like to know more. It's a painful process for us both. I'd like to know, does the process of trying to recall the details of these affairs lead to a fond reminiscing and savoring the memories of the good old times which were enjoyed during the affairs, does the process of trying to recall eventually tempt the unfaithful into a relapse? I think that's a complicated question in the sense that it is very individualistic. In reality, at this point, you're probably thinking about the affair partners far more than he is. And for sure, he's tried to suppress all of that. And at this point, I seriously doubt it's something that seems pleasant to him just because of the pain that you're going through. So I don't think that it's a temptation into relapse. In the long run, he probably needs to store it back and stay focused in the moment and what he needs to do. I know right now he's trying to go through the timeline, and hopefully he'll be able to help with that. One of the things, if you haven't done this, that I think would be helpful is looking at the articles in the library on disclosure. You want to be careful how much information you need. I'm not sure what you're trying to get within the timeline, but the one thing you want to avoid are comparison questions. Hopefully, he can at least come up with when things started, when things ended, the types of behaviors, whether there was protected, unprotected sex. Anyway, the goal of discovery, I believe you can find that information and those disclosure articles on the website. Just I think you can probably search for that in the library. Again, in the long run, he's going to probably only think about these people as you keep asking questions about them, and it's going to be good for him to be able to move beyond that. At some point, you may not ever get all the information you want. You need to ask yourself the question, however, am I getting the information that I need in order to get my head around it? And also, at some point, do I know enough? And you've got to then begin to ask yourself the question, why do I want to know, and how is this information going to help me move forward? Because when you come to the place that you know enough, then you need to say, okay, I'm going to try to move forward without continuing the search, because it's time for us to move to the next phase. It's difficult to continue in recovery as long as you're stuck still in the discovery phase. It sounds like this has been going on since January. After reading the articles on disclosure, figure out what you don't know and try to get those out of the way and see if you can't make a decision one way or another, whether you know enough so you can move forward. If you have more questions about that in terms of where you're stuck after reading those articles, would you please make another post next week so we can continue the dialogue on this? Finally, the last question. Is emotional safety important? Is emotional safety important for both parties during recovery, or is surrendering the unfaithful's emotional safety needed so the hurt spouse can relieve anger, vent frustrations, and search for healing? If surrendering one's emotional safety is supportive, what's appropriate and what isn't? When my spouse says or does something out of hurt, anger, fear, it's extremely hurtful. It's not until I've had time, 3 to 4 hours, to realize their pain before I'm empathetic enough to accept their hurtful words or actions and understand their origin. Is this normal? I also feel, as the unfaithful spouse, it's not acceptable to express hurt to my betrayed spouse or our EMSO group wall. Is there a safe way to express the unfaithful spouse's past? One thing that is addressed in the Hope for Healing course is this very issue. And certainly that is a place where you can express the hurt. At the same time, I don't know how far you are in your EMSO course. But I believe strongly that creating a culture of safety for you and for your mate is very important. I understand their hurt and their need to potentially express that hurt. At the same time, pain that's not transformed is going to be transmitted. And it's their responsibility as well as your responsibility to try to be safe enough, that to understand you're responsible for you and you've got to be safe enough for our marriage, because you don't want to make things worse. Your hurt spouse ultimately doesn't want to make things worse. That being said, you being able to be a safe vessel of anger for them, a place where you can at least listen and hear their pain, try to hear that pain, and just be able to hear is somewhat healing. My concern is when it gets to verbal abuse, because not only are they potentially hurting you, they're hurting themselves. It's understandable, maybe just because of the flooding initially in the recovery process, but hopefully they also make a commitment that their anger is to be constructive, not destructive. I can tell you, though, that that does take time. I actually had somebody in my office, and they're about 3 months out, say something I thought was interesting last week. She told her husband every time she tells him, which happens 1 to 2 times a week, that she wants him to pack up all of his crap and get out. She said, I know I say that sometimes, but I promise you that is not what I really want. But when I'm flooded, that's what I say, and I'm doing my best to try to learn how to control that flooding process so I don't say things I don't really mean. Understanding the entire flooding process from chapter, or from week 5, or maybe 6 because of the intro week, which is, you know, basically intrusive thoughts. Hopefully you can also have empathy and understand when they go to that place that really it's not them, it's just them expressing the pain that they've got. And together, I hope the two of you can come to the place where you end up having more rational conversations than flooded conversations. Right now, try to be patient and see if you can't get to realizing their pain a little sooner than 3 to 5 hours. It's really hard, but as they're talking, remind yourself this is just their pain speaking. It's really not who they are, because I'm sure you have other situations that there are those emotional conversations. I don't want you to really surrender your emotional safety, but I do want you to be a safe vessel of anger. And if you can frame it properly, understanding this is about flooding, not about how they see you, then I think you can maintain your emotional safety, have empathy, and hopefully as they go through the EMSO course, they'll begin to set a goal of dealing with their flooding. So that's all of our questions today. I want to wish everybody, but hope everybody has a great week, and I look forward to speaking with you next week. If you've got other questions, please get them posted. So to healing.